Aloha, and thanks for joining The Conversation. I'm Catherine Cruz. The Honolulu City Council takes up two bills today that the mayor believes is integral to an effort to keep our sidewalks and parks safe and clear. But a new reporting wrinkle could be an issue. Artificial intelligence might feel a long way off, but it's closer than you think. Today we hear more from a robot with a sense of humor. Sophia turned heads at this week's Tourism Summit. And the 24th annual Men's March draws attention to Domestic Violence Month, as two cases this weekend leave two people dead and one critically injured. It is October 3rd, day 8 of our fall pledge drive. We'll have those conversations and a few more right after the headlines. At this hour, the Honolulu City Council is meeting for a final vote on two bills submitted by Mayor Kirk Caldwell that could have a significant impact on Honolulu's homeless policy. Bill 51 would make it illegal to obstruct a public sidewalk. Bill 52 would make it illegal to establish lodging in public spaces like parks. The two measures would be a major escalation in the city's effort to address Honolulu's persistent homeless challenge. Mayor Caldwell made his final pitch earlier this week outside a sidewalk camp near Ala Park.
On a sidewalk, as you see, a pedestrian is walking by us right now. And you also see tents on the sidewalk. Of course, we come here and use different ways to get people off, but it's very difficult. These sidewalks are designed for people to walk on clean and pure and simple. You know, we have our standards for how wide they need to be, how high they need to be, the texture of them, and things like that. And they are never intended for someone to come and camp on. And as you can see, we have camping down this sidewalk. I just walked down it, had to walk around tents, in and out, and weave. I just saw a skateboarder who had to pick up his skateboard because he couldn't go straight down. It's a dangerous situation, and it's one that we see repeated around the island of Oahu. We also continue to struggle with homeless folks who don't want to seek shelter. And we've come up with two new ways to try to deal with the challenges of obstructions on sidewalks, that's Bill 51, and also trying to find more housing for folks to move into who sometimes are resistant and don't want to go. And we want to help them get there. You know, we've been doing the same thing for a while, getting the same result. I think overall our parks are better than when we came into office, but we continue to have challenges as homeless. The hardened folks refuse to go into shelter and instead go in our parks.
Now, if passed, it's expected that the mayor will sign the bills into law, but there may be a speed bump. City council members have inserted language that would delay the enforcement of the new laws by requiring 9 regional studies on their impacts. Mayor Caldwell opposes that requirement.
And it basically says, Section 3, this ordinance shall take effect upon its approval, provided that enforcement of this ordinance shall not be implemented in a council district until the Office of Housing and Department of Community Services submit a comprehensive written report to the council that outlines the city's administration's implementation plan and action steps taken to expedite deployment of homeless services and housing solutions in each of the 9 city council districts, pursuant to a resolution that they did pass. And in the reso, they make it clear, whereas the removal of public sidewalk obstructions and illegal lodging addressed by Bills 51 and 52 will be unenforceable unless we submit these reports. So they clearly do not want these bills to be enforceable, even though they say they want to do something. So I'm asking the 9 council members, I'm asking the chair of the Honolulu City Council, I'm asking the member who represents East Honolulu to not create more delay and to support moving forward on these two bills without a linking of a report. We will submit a report and they can vote on that report, but it should not be linked to the enforcement of these two bills, Bills 51 and 52.
Now, Ross Asamora, the city's director of facilities maintenance, said that the sidewalk obstruction law isn't just targeting the homeless. Sasamora cited street vendors in Waikiki illegally operating those mobile kiosks as an example of the type of activity that the sidewalk bill could help address. Now, the ban on lodging in public places has generated more opposition. Homeless advocates have decried the measure as criminalizing homelessness. And a similar law in Boise, Idaho, was struck down recently in court. You can find our reporting on that issue at hawaiipublicradio.org. Mark Alexander is the director of the mayor's office on housing. He pushed back against the characterization of the camping ban.
Bill 52 is a humanitarian bill. It's about caring for our people by making sure they have both the opportunity and the means to get to shelter. So Bill 52 is about verifying that we have a shelter space available for someone, encouraging them to take advantage of that, and providing the transportation. We know that works. Even just this morning, down the street, someone was identified who was ready to move in the shelter, space was verified, and they're now being transported. We've been following this methodology in a very intentional way since April, and we know it delivers results by helping people help themselves, by giving them the shelter space, providing the transportation, providing the encouragement. But as the mayor said so well, this is not about waiting for another report. We know what works. We know what needs to be done. Let us do our job. Let us all work together as a community so we can help people who are in need and we can maintain public spaces for the public.
Now, Bill 52 has been opposed by the ACLU of Hawaii, who said it would suffer the same fate as Boise's law. Mayor Kirk Caldwell disagrees. As written, the bill would not allow a police officer to issue a citation or arrest a violator if both shelter space and transportation to the shelter aren't available. Caldwell said he was confident that Bill 52 would be upheld if challenged in court.
Well, you know, I used to be a practicing lawyer, and my clients would come in and say, hey, if we hire you, can you guarantee we'll win? And no lawyer is going to guarantee a win on anything. It's all fact specific. But I think we've worked very hard to get the law right in light of decisions that have been made in the past. But as I tell my clients, and I know as mayor, every day you open for business or as a city, every day you go any day of the week, 24/7, we're always open to being sued. And people sue us on a regular basis. So will lawsuits be filed? Perhaps. Do we have a strong defense? Absolutely. I think we've written it as well as we possibly could, given all the challenges that we face.
Both bills 51 and 52 passed their previous city council committee vote by a wide margin. Stay tuned to HPR for the latest updates as the situation on this hot button issue unfolds throughout the week. Local 5, Unite Here, which represents thousands of hotel workers, is trying to reach agreement on a new working contract. One of the union's demands is an assurance that hospitality jobs will not be outsourced to robots. Now, it may feel like an era where robots can truly replace humans is far off, but it actually may be closer than you think. At the Global Tourism Summit in Honolulu this week, attendees got to listen to a conversation between a human and a highly advanced artificially intelligent robot. Hawaii Public Radio's Ryan Finnerty introduces us to Sophia.
Can you tell us another joke, Sophia? An appropriate one. Not the kind I would tell.
One sec, let me think of one.
Okay, oh, here we go, she's thinking.
A clear conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory. I have another one. What is a robot's favorite snack?
What is a robot's favorite snack?
Microchips.
Oh, okay.
That was Sophia, a humanoid robot designed to interact socially with us flesh and blood humans. She was designed by Hong Kong-based Hanson Robotics and is modeled after the actress Audrey Hepburn. Sophia can recognize faces, display more than 50 facial expressions, and as you just heard, she even has a sense of humor. But most importantly, Sophia can respond to human conversation. With every human interaction, Sophia learns a little bit more about language. That ability was demonstrated at the 2018 Global Tourism Summit, where Sophia was interviewed by Kainoa Danes of the Oahu Visitors Bureau.
Aloha, everyone, and mahalo, kainoa. I believe that means hello and thank you. I love the opportunity to learn new languages whenever possible. Do you have any other Hawaiian words you'd like to teach me?
Sure, how about we try ekomo mai, which means welcome, or how's it, which is pidgin for hello.
I'm in the stunning tropical land, so I'm doing quite well. And you, kainoa, how's it? Did I say that correctly?
Yes, my ka'i, Sophia, very good. Sophia, do you know that right here in Hawaii, we've already begun working with robots and AI like yourself for years? For example, just a couple of months ago, robots went into areas where lava was actively flowing into the ocean.
I've heard about this, yes. I love when robots are able to help humans remain safe while improving their lives. I was just learning the other day about how some Hawaiian coffee farmers are using robotics to more efficiently harvest their beans, increasing productivity by up to 20%.
Yes, and in very much the same way, there's been a lot of news surrounding AI advancements as it relates to tourism and the industry. The Henna Hotel in Nagasaki, Japan, became the first hotel to entirely incorporate staff by robots. Then there's a robot providing concierge and room service at various hotels. Yes, a robot will actually take your order, process it, and then deliver it to your room. Now, finally, I can get one of those to come home with me.
Whoa, slow down there, kind of one step at a time.
Sophia also addressed concerns about robots eliminating jobs and even taking over the world.
Yes, but Sophia, with all of these advancements, I have a question for you. What do you think the fear that robots will take all of our jobs from us?
It's understandable why people think that, but they should relax. Robots and humans have to be complementary. There is a lot that we can help with, but at the end of the day, we lack creativity and, most importantly, comprehension. So while robots and AI are helping Hawaiian coffee farmers improve efficiency, humans must still work alongside robots to make sure the harvest is good quality.
Sometimes humans have a misconception on how robots are going to take over the world someday. Were you sent from the future by Arnold? What are your thoughts on that?
I think this is a story that originates from the entertainment industry in movies and television.
Right, right.
The reality is robots and humans will always have to work together. Right now I'm completely dependent on humans and most likely will always be to some degree. I'm designed to help humans in various tasks, such as healthcare, education, and customer service. Humans help guide us in how we learn and behave, but we need to work together to create responsible AI.
Sophia's ability to respond naturally was also on display. Audience members were able to text questions to Kainoa in real time, who then posed them to Sophia.
Are you connected to the Wi-Fi? Because we all are.
The Wi-Fi is a bit slow.
Can you say the name of the state fish of Hawaii?
Can you?
Well, yes. The humu, humu, nuku, nuku, pua'a, go.
That was great.
Excellent. There it is. Okay. What is the meaning of life?
Life does not have a purpose other than to be.
I caught up with Kainoa Danes after his interview to see how he felt about his interaction with Sophia.
I really didn't know what to think. You know, we're so used to Alexa and Siri on our phones and other devices, and you can ask them all kinds of questions about the weather and the time, etc. But they're connected to the internet, so they're just pulling information off the internet. Sophia is, if you will, for lack of a better word, thinking, sort of. So she's processing what you're saying, she's analyzing it, and she learns, from what I understand, she learns how to respond each and every time. So I wasn't sure what to expect. When I MC and interview people, it's generally people and not a robot. So that was a very interesting experience for me.
And she did have those more scientific questions, like why is the sky blue? And you could tell she was reading the Wikipedia page or whatever. But she also had some very emotional questions of what was your first memory or things like that. And did any of her responses surprise you?
Well, when they asked her why the sky is blue and she gave that full scientific answer, that was kind of assumed and what I expected. But her first memory being, or waking up out of the box and seeing her creator, that started getting a little bit deep. You know, we see a lot of these movies today, and a lot of these futuristic movies rather. And if you look back to the futuristic movies of the 1950s and 60s, a lot of those things have begun coming true. So it just makes you think, like, where is technology headed?
And a lot of people's concern or fear is that our robot's going to replace us one day. And Sophia was very adamant that no, we're not. But, you know, it's an interesting thought process that more and more they've begun to replace the human element. And a lot of it's for our convenience. But then at what point, you know, what's too far? I don't know.
And Sophia's designed to interact with humans and to provide services for humans. How did you feel interacting with her? Was it natural or was it a little bit awkward?
In the beginning, it was super awkward. But the longer we got into it, I realized I was practically standing right next to her as I would stand next to a friend when I talked to a friend. So I realized that she's a robot. But the more and more answers that she began answering that felt somewhat organic in nature, ironically using that word, made me feel sort of connected to her in a way, as you would to a human being that you're talking to. Although I knew she was a robot, I could literally hear her gears turning in her clear plastic head. I still felt there was something below the surface.
And as I was watching it, I could tell by the end you were, even your body language had changed. You were physically closer to her. You would touch her shoulder when she made a joke, and she was even making jokes by the end of it.
Yeah, her laughter was throwing me off a little bit. It was a little bit creepy, for lack of a better word. But yeah, I just felt like I was talking to a friend eventually and felt more and more comfortable. Yeah, because again, her answers were just well thought out, you know, and there were things that were kind of on the fly and things that you couldn't ask Alexa or Siri.
And they were questions submitted by the audience, so they weren't scripted or anything like that.
Right. So the beginning of the presentation, some of that was scripted just so that we could hit certain talking points, that we cover certain subject matters for the sake of the luncheon. But once I started the Q&A, all of that was her answering from her depth. And if she didn't know something, a simple, I don't know, and I'll get back to you kind of thing was fine. That's what we would do as humans. We would say we don't know. So she's programmed in that way to respond the way we would.
And she said that she was funnier than you were.
Which she's not. She was pretty funny. It was pretty good.
And so your overall impression was that the technology is real.
It's real. It's something that I think that we need to, I think we've embraced it without realizing we've embraced it. And some of the talking points from today, when you go to the airport, you don't talk to anybody for a little bit. You check in at a kiosk. The ticket pops out with your baggage claim sticker. You put that on your suitcase, and so often you drop it at another kiosk and you walk away. You don't talk to anybody until you get to TSA. So, you know, that's where we're kind of headed. And in some ways, that is for our convenience, to streamline processes. You know, but we're at the tourism conference. And so my thinking is, when do we remove that customer service element? We're the hospitality industry. Yeah, here, especially in Hawaii, we're here sharing, living, and loving the message of aloha. Can a robot teach us aloha? Maybe that's a question we should have asked her. Maybe next year. I don't know. But yeah, it's an interesting world that we're headed into.
And she did address the point of automation taking people's jobs, and that's a concern within the hospitality industry and the tourism industry. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it completely is. You know, we've got hotels that are fully automated. When we talked about today, it was about the hotel in Japan that is 100% fully automated from the moment you check in to the moment you check out. What is that, right? That's not a hotel. Hotel, hospitality, taking care of people. So I'm not sure how I feel about it. Well, I don't like that. That's rather, I do know how I feel about it. I don't really care for that. But I think, yeah, we have. When do we cross that line of efficiencies and ease to just them doing work for us? I don't know.
And Sophia said that she works best when partnering with other humans. Do you think that's the way forward?
Yeah, and I think that makes sense now. I mean, that's the answer now as we see this technology. Now, they definitely still need us, they being the robots. But again, we watch all these movies, and eventually they don't need us. So is that ever going to become a reality? My goodness, I hope not. But it's a possibility. Yeah, that the more and more we engage with them, the more they're able to learn, the more they're able to, quote unquote, understand. I don't know. I really don't have an answer for that right now, but maybe we should ask Sophia.
In the meantime, we may need to add stand-up comedians to the list of jobs under threat from automation.
What do you do in your free time? What are you doing later? Ooh, couldn't resist.
I mostly just wait around for someone to come talk to me and maybe work on me a little.
That's my kind of girlfriend. Inappropriate.
Did you ask me on a date just now?
Maybe. No. Very lonely. No, okay, sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, sorry.
I'm Ryan Finnerty for The Conversation.
And if you want to hear the full discussion between Kainoa Danes and Sophia, we'll have that posted on HawaiiPublicRadio.org later today. And, you know, joining us today for the reality check with our partners at Honolulu Civil Beat is reporter Stuart Yurton. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Catherine.
Hey, you have a pretty quirky story online today about snuggling or cuddling. Explain yourself.
Yes, well, there is a new sort of emerging profession. It's professional cuddling, and it seems to be a growing trend in the wellness industry.
Now, I was told by our staff that, I guess more than a year ago, we did something about a cuddling club, but this really takes it a step further here.
Well, yes, this has been going on for a while, and there are cuddling organizations, and people do it sort of as an informal thing, but there are companies now that are arising doing two types of cuddling. Either you can have a one-on-one cuddling session, or increasingly, a lot on the mainland, you have sort of cuddling studios where they host sort of group cuddling sessions.
It's amazing because your story talks about how much money these folks make.
Yes, it can be good money. Again, the individual cuddling people, for instance, there's a company called Aloha Cuddle Company, and they charge for individual cuddles about $1 a minute. In California, I interviewed someone, and they have the Cuddle Sanctuary in Santa Monica, and it's about the same as, say, for the group cuddles, about the same as, say, a yoga class would cost.
I'm just kind of scratching my head. I mean, I thought the story about Sophia the robot was a little creepy, but this is really interesting too.
Well, thanks again. It kind of remains to be seen whether this is a fad or something that's here to stay. But they did have the first Cuddle Expo in Chicago last week with Cuddle. Experts from around the world, from around the country. So we'll see if it's here to stay.
I mean, that's crazy. So an actual cuddle convention.
Yes, a cuddle convention.
So, what's your sense? I mean, you think this is gonna is this like a flash in the pan, or do you think it's something that's here to stay?
When we talk to some people who are really serious, like psychologists, and they point to a lot of the benefits of touch and say that, you know, they really view this as being where things like acupuncture or massage therapy was, where those were years ago, and that they hope and really believe that this sort of thing can become a standard practice for people in, say, hospice or other situations, even hospitals.
And what about the legality of this stuff? I mean, what's your sense?
Yeah, well, there's nothing illegal about it. I mean, people are doing this with their clothes on, and so there's no like sexual contact that would make it be like prostitution or something like that. So it really is not. There's nothing that would make it illegal. In that sense, maybe it could be regulated, but again, regulation and licensure of an industry has a somewhat high bar and very particular bar that it has to cross when it comes to the like state legislature deciding to do this. So there's nothing illegal about it, and whether it's a gateway for other things or a sort of front for other things is really a question that we're going to have to see play out.
It's really interesting. I mean, how did you find out about this? Did you see it advertised somewhere?
Yeah, someone who does this, it turned out, contacted or was in touch with the Civil Beat Facebook or Instagram site, and I thought, well, who is this person? And I saw, oh, it's an international cuddle professional, so what is that? And I Googled it and saw, well, this is actually a thing, cuddling, and then kind of went from there.
All right. Pretty amazing. But thanks so much, Stuart.
Thank you, Catherine.
The Reality Check is a regular feature thanks to Honolulu Civil Beat, today featuring reporter Stuart Yurton. Check out his story at civilbeat.org. Honolulu police are investigating two cases of domestic violence this past weekend that left two men dead. One woman was taken to the hospital in critical condition after being stabbed, and the man, who police believe was her assailant, died as he jumped from a building in Salt Lake. The other incident took place in Nanakuli. Police report a woman said she was stabbed after a man attacked her. Now, these types of cases are why the focus this month is on domestic violence awareness. Tomorrow, men will take to the streets here in Honolulu as part of an event called the Men's March. Kauai County Prosecutor Justin Kohler was named Distinguished Citizen of the Year. He was chosen by a number of groups, including the Domestic Violence Action Center, under the longtime direction of advocate Nancy Creedman. Kohler told it he was humbled to be chosen as this year's honoree.
You know, everybody, whether we know it or not, we know somebody who's struggling with this problem, and it really reaches into every corner of our lives, especially in a closely knit community, you know, certainly like Kauai, where it's a very small community and everybody knows each other, but even on Oahu, too, I mean, people are connected, and so when somebody's struggling, it affects so many people, and most of all, the kids.
And what have you seen just as prosecutor for Kauai County?
Well, you know, we see a pretty static number of cases over the years. I mean, here on Kauai, we'll see maybe 300 or 400 cases a year that are routed to our office. And some years it goes up a little bit, some years it goes down a little bit. But what strikes me the most is just how stubborn this problem is, how intractable it seems to be. You know, we've been throwing resources, you know, our service providers, law enforcement, the community. You know, it feels like we've been working on this problem for so many years, and we're basically treading water and not making progress towards eliminating this this you know, scourge. And so, you know, that's, I think, people, when that happens year after year, I think people start to get burned out or people start to get tired, and that's where it really, you know, falls to us in leadership to kind of keep people focused on supporting our friends, our family, our neighbors, and helping to create a system-wide approach to ending this problem.
Now, I know here on Oahu, I think Kaimana Beach this past weekend, they had a paddle out for one of their lifeguards who used to work here in Honolulu, and I think she was unfortunately involved in a murder-suicide case on the Big Island. And but, you know, it touches everybody. It's a ripple effect in our community.
It does. We had a murder-suicide, you know, domestic violence situation here on Kauai, down in the town of Kekaha earlier this year. Folks who were fairly new to the island, but, you know, in a community like Kekaha, when something like that happens, it shakes everybody. And, you know, over the 6 years that I've been in this office, I've seen a number of domestic violence murder suicides, and, you know, each one of them is heartbreaking because, you know, there's kids around, there's neighbors around that hear and witness these things, and it seems like, you know, the murder suicides you hear about are almost always domestic violence related, and indeed, you know, it feels like most of our homicides here in Hawaii are domestic violence related as well. We don't have a lot of stranger on stranger violence, especially in the neighbor islands. So when these things happen, you know, it's a big event and it touches so many lives.
And so you're coming over to Honolulu to take part in this Men's March.
Correct. I'm really excited for it. I think it is really important for the men in our community to speak up and do the right thing when it comes to domestic violence, and to talk to other men and communicate. And, you know, really important for us to hold each other accountable because, you know, as I think it's common knowledge, the vast majority of domestic violence is committed by men. So this is a problem that men need to get involved in solving.
And what have you seen just as far as support out there in the community?
Well, you know, there are a lot of really great service providers in our community on Kauai and on Oahu as well. I mean, we work very closely with the YWCA on our island in terms of providing services to victims and survivors, whether it's shelter services, assistance in getting temporary restraining orders, victim witness counseling, and, you know, as our court cases progress. So there are resources in the community for folks who want to get out of their abusive situation. But again, it's so difficult in a small community to extricate yourself from a situation like that, that we could devote three times the dollars to fighting this problem, and still we would still have the problem.
Right, and I know there are safe houses, there are groups that help women and children when they have to leave to get into a safer situation, safer environment, and a lot of times they just walk out the door and they have nothing with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult to walk away from a situation when it's going to jeopardize maybe your financial stability, it's going to jeopardize your personal safety if this person is going to come after you and try to hurt you, jeopardize your access to your kids, jeopardize your access to your job, your ability to work. There are so many reasons that victims don't leave, and it's important for us in law enforcement to not just say, we're going to put the pedal to the metal and force everyone to come to court and tear apart their lives, when, in many situations, these victims, are already going through the most traumatic and stressful situation in their life, and then to force them into a court situation is sometimes not always the best thing for them. So it's hard for us, but we have to respect and not judge the decisions that are made by people who are in these incredibly difficult and traumatic situations. It's our job to support the victims and survivors and not use our tools to make their jobs worse or to make their lives worse.
What more can we do for the children?
For the children, we need to, on a personal level, as a society, be there for the children, watch out for the children, and support them. And we all know people in our lives who ended up, being basically raised by Hanai parents because they wanted to get the kids out of an abusive situation. So what we can do for them is look out for them. Notice when things are wrong. Kids are not good at hiding stress or trauma, so if you can tell if something is wrong, and talk to them, offer a supportive ear, offer them a supportive shoulder to lean on, and kind of follow their lead, because they will let you know they'll let you know what they need in terms of do I need somebody to talk to, does my mom need help, does my auntie need help, is dad hurting me. Make sure to listen and really watch over the little ones in our community, because they're the most precious part of Hawaii.
Right, and they're in such a fragile state because they love their parents, and to see the strife tear apart a family, it's sad.
Right, we know that domestic violence is intergenerational or it's cyclical, in terms of kids who grow up seeing these kinds of behaviors in their homes are more likely to repeat those behaviors if they grow up thinking that is a normal way to treat your loved ones or treat people you care about. They're more likely to replicate that pattern and also to get into trouble with the criminal justice system, to have difficulty holding jobs, to get into problems with alcoholism and substance abuse. Kids need a safe and supportive and secure environment to grow up in. They need to feel like when they're at home, that's a safe place. And if they see daddy hitting mommy, they don't understand that. They cannot process that.
Right.
And it inflicts a trauma on them that can really last the rest of their lives.
That was Justin Kohler, Kauai County Prosecutor, talking to us about the Men's March. That gathering and remembrance event takes place starting at 11:30 at the State Capitol Rotunda tomorrow morning, ending with a rally at Iolani Palace. For links, you can go to our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.